This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com. This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Welcome to segment number 5 in the trial of Adam Montgomery. For today, let's go to the courtroom and hear the audio.
Just be careful walking around here.
Okay.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Do you swear that the testimony you're about to provide will be the truth and the whole truth under the pains and penalties of perjury?
I do.
Okay. You can have a seat and make yourself comfortable. Can you start by stating and spelling your name for the record?
Detective Adam Bergeron Rosa, Bergeron-Rosa.
Thank you. And how are you presently employed?
Detective with the Manchester Police Department.
How long have you been a detective with the Manchester Police Department?
Since September of 2017.
And what is your current assignment?
Detective.
Are you in a particular unit?
I primarily do burglaries and property crimes.
And what are your duties and responsibilities as a detective with the Manchester Police Department?
To investigate cases that need further attention within the jurisdiction of Manchester, to include interviewing suspects, witnesses, involved parties, managing crime scenes, collecting physical evidence, and obtaining video and reviewing that video.
And to be a detective with the Manchester Police Department, does that require any specialized training or experience?
I have received specialized training and experience, yes.
And can you tell us what that is?
I went to 40-hour week homicide school and crime scene processing, training in interview and interrogation, and forensic statement analysis, about 80 hours of fingerprint processing and collection, and crime scene photography, about well over 300 hours of other training.
And is that the training that you just described, is that continuing training?
It always continues.
How long have you been involved with law enforcement?
At the end of November, it will be 15 years.
And how long have you been a detective?
6.
Prior to the 6 years as a detective, what were your duties?
I was a patrol officer for the previous 9.
And for the previous 9, what agency or organization was that with?
Manchester.
Did you graduate from the New Hampshire Police Academy?
I did.
When did you graduate?
April of 2009.
Can you please describe your role and involvement in this case?
So on January 5th of 2022, I was asked by my superiors to use a program called Leads Online to look up pawn activity for Adam Montgomery, Kayla Montgomery, and Kelsey Small.
And you just mentioned Leads Online.
Yes.
What is Leads Online?
So it's a law enforcement pawn database that we have access to monitor secondhand transactions with pawn shops, jewelry stores, and, you know, eco-ATMs.
Are you currently a liaison between the Manchester Police Department and Leads Online?
I am.
How long have you been in that role?
Probably 4 years.
And I think you mentioned you were asked to track information related to Kelsey Small?
Yes.
And so how does that work?
So I go on to the program, Leads Online, and I plug in the name, date of birth, whatever information that I have. And there's results that come up, whether through Sendexing or a direct match, and it shows their secondhand pawn transaction in history, what item that they sold. You have to use a valid photo ID to do so, so you get your privilege to that, a picture of the seller as they were that day, and what company or business received that item and sold, provided the seller cash for the item.
Did your search with respect to Kelsey Small yield results?
Yes, it did.
Did you review the results?
I did.
If you saw them today, would you recognize them?
I would.
Your Honor, may I approach the witness?
Yes.
So, Detective Bergeron Rose, I'm handing you what's been marked for identification as State's Exhibits 46A through E, and I'm just going to ask you to look through those and describe, or just look through those and look up.
These are certified records of those transactions from Eco ATM.
Okay, and are those true and correct copies?
Yes, they are.
And Your Honor, at this point, I move to strike the ID and mark this bold.
Any objection other than the one at the bench?
Subject to
the one that's been overruled. The ID may be stricken, and it's entered as a full exhibit.
Mentioned receiving the records that you just looked at. What did you do next in your investigation?
Well, after finding those transactions, we want those items for the investigation that we're conducting. And so I called Eco ATM to facilitate obtaining those from the company.
I'm just going to ask you to please keep your voice up. It's a big room, and all the jurors need to be able to hear you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So if I heard you correctly, you said you wanted those items?
Yes, for the investigation.
The records that you just looked at, did they contain evidence of sale transactions?
Yes, they did.
Do you know what those transactions were related to?
The seller was Kelsey Small, and it contained four items, one being a Samsung Galaxy 12, the second being a Samsung Galaxy A01 phone, a Samsung tablet, and then a Alcatel cell phone. And they were sold to the Eco ATM Koysk on December 30th of 2021.
And when you say you wanted those items for your investigation, those are the items that you're referring to?
Those specific ones, yes.
Did you collect those items?
I did.
When you collect evidence as a detective, how do you log it?
Normal practice is your initials, one through however far you go.
And I think you had mentioned a Samsung cell phone A01?
Yes.
Cell phone. Do you remember how you identified that item?
ABR4.
What was your next step in your part in this investigation?
Well, then I contacted, during this whole process, I contacted Eco ATM and requested permission in their policy on downloading the contents of those cell phones.
Did they consent to the search of those cell phones or the items that were seized?
Yes, they did.
Searching cell phones, is that something that you do as a detective?
Not me personally, no.
Did you hand those items off to someone else?
I did, to Detective Krozik.
Did you take additional steps during your part in this investigation?
I did.
And can you tell the jury what that was?
So this Eco ATM, this Koysk kiosk, was in Walmart at 725 Gold Street in Manchester. So it's in the customer service center, and that's monitored by Walmart Video. So I requested the video from the loss prevention officer, Mike Dobie, of those transactions when they were occurring for the investigation.
And those records that you looked at, was there a date on those records?
Yes, December 30th, 2021.
Did you obtain the footage from Walmart from December 30th, of 2021 for that relevant time period?
Yes, I did.
And did you log that into evidence?
I did.
What did you log it into evidence as?
ABR2.
If I could have just a moment.
Thank you, Detective.
Your Honor, I pass the witness.
I'm going to show you, a copy of what has been marked State's Exhibit for ID 20. Tell me what that is.
That is the Samsung A01 cell phone packaging, ABR4.
Okay, that might have been a bad question. Is that the packaging for a piece of evidence?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's what we do.
Is that what you packaged it in?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so, and which piece of evidence? I know that you said it.
This is the Samsung Galaxy Model A01 cell phone.
I'd move to strike the ID, Your Honor.
Any objection?
No objection.
All right, the ID is stricken.
And the jury is going to have a copy of this back with them. But the packaging that you have this in is a yellow...
It's a manila envelope.
But it has, like, insulation, the bubbles inside, so it's not just a flat envelope.
Oh, yes. Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yep.
And then the top, there is a red thing.
Can That's evidence tape.
What that is?
Evidence tape.
Okay, we were talking at the same time, so let's try and avoid it, okay? So essentially, you take an item that you've collected for evidence, put it in an envelope, and close the envelope, and then put this red tape on top, right?
Right.
And the reason that you do it is that if somebody tries to get inside that envelope that you have put the evidence in, you'll know it, right?
Yes, I will.
Because to get inside, they'll either have to rip the envelope or rip the tape, right?
Correct.
And so when you package something and you have the tape where you put it in to seal that off, if somebody's going to open a piece of evidence, they generally leave that tape alone and open the envelope somewhere else, right?
Depends on the person.
Okay. So one way to do it is to, if you want to get access to the cell phone, instead of going through where you have the red tape on top, somebody might cut an entry along the side and take the item of evidence out of the package that way, right?
It's within the realm of possibilities.
Okay. And you, when somebody, however they do it, when they put an item of evidence back in its packaging, they tape up the area that they opened up, right?
Of course.
And they put their initials and the date when that happens, right?
Yes.
So that from the packaging alone, you can tell a lot about how many times an item has been handled, opened up, right?
Correct.
The dates, because the dates are on the each piece of tape, right?
Yep.
And the person who went in, right?
Yes.
Okay. And that is one of the ways that you keep track of evidence, right?
Yes.
To make sure that nobody's gone inside and tampered with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because right? You want to keep that piece of evidence from the moment it comes into your possession as clean as possible till the point that it may or may not be used in court, right?
Correct.
And that if there is something that is changed in that piece of evidence, it is identified all along the way so it can be explained in court what has changed.
Chain of custody.
Okay. Thank you.
Your Honor, may this witness be excused?
Yes, you may step down.
Thank you.
This witness is excused.
Department. At this time, the state would call Detective Lou Crossing to the stand, please. Watch your step as you take the witness.
Good afternoon, sir. Just be careful going around here for me, please.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
If you could just remain standing for a brief moment. Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the testimony that you will give this jury will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. I'll be back.
I do.
Thank you. Please feel free to have a seat. Excuse me, just a minute, Detective. I want to make sure that this is proper and he said.
Detective, since we're being recorded here today, would you please state your full name, spelling both your first and your last name for the record?
Louis Krawczyk, LouisKrawczyk.
And Detective Krawczyk, where are you currently employed?
The Manchester Police Department.
How long have you been working with them?
Since 2001.
And are you a full-time certified officer with them?
Yes.
How long since 2001 or before?
2003, I became certified.
2003, okay, thank you.
Do you attend the New Hampshire State Police Training Academy and for a full-time academy class?
Yes.
And what was your graduating class number on that?
131.
131. What are some of the different duties that you have currently at the Manchester Police Department?
I'm in the cybercrime division as a detective, and I work with electronic evidence.
How long have you been working with different types of electronic evidence?
About 6 years.
Could you talk a little bit with regards to the training that you've had over those 6 years or even before with respect to electronic evidence and also with respect to any training that you've had on searching cellular telephones?
I've had training and certifications through Cellebrite, which is one of the main manufacturers of equipment for extractions. I've had a lot of training through the U.S. Secret Service. They have a facility in Alabama that provides training for digital devices. I've also had a lot of classes through Magnet Forensics and some forensic certifications.
Do you still attend regular training sessions to keep up to date with the latest practices and technology?
Yes, to my wife's chagrin.
Okay. And As part of your work with the Manchester Police Department, do you conduct data extractions from cell phones?
Yes.
Over the years, approximately, if you could even give us a number, how many different cell phones have you extracted data from?
I'd say it's in the thousands.
In the thousands?
Yes.
Okay. In that case, I'd like to ask you about cell phones in general, and if you could kind of educate all of us here in the room a little bit. When it comes to an identifier for a cell phone, what is an IMEI number?
It's a unique identifying number that follows a global standard, and it's unique to an individual device, so the carriers can identify that particular phone.
So roughly, I mean, how many digits are we talking about in this number?
I think it's 15.
15? Okay. And with regards to that number, you said it is unique. How is it unique? Well, what does a cell phone do with its IMEI number? And how does that information get communicated to, let's say, a cell phone carrier or wireless carrier?
It basically works like a serial number. So it's an individual number for that phone, but it follows a global pattern. So different companies are not reusing the same number. It's always a unique number, unlike a serial number, which can a different company can reuse the same number.
Okay.
The carrier, when you're using your phone, can determine what the IMEI number is.
So. This phone that I have from the state of New Hampshire, this has its own unique IMEI number?
At least one, yes.
At least one. And is it unique to any phone that's owned by the same person, or is it unique to the handset itself?
It's unique to the handset.
The handset. In connection with the investigation into Adam Montgomery, did you extract data from a cell phone that was provided to you by Detective Adam Bergeron Rosa that was labeled evidence number ABR4?
Yes.
Okay. And that particular cell phone that you received, did that have an IMEI number of 352-082-509-319-804?
Yes.
Okay. Generally, how is data extracted from a phone? So you can explain to the jury, how did you get information off this phone? What does it look like? What's the physical process you put it through?
There's two parts. There's hardware and software components, and there's we have companies that specialize in, they make devices and software specifically to get evidence from phones. So on a typical phone, I'll plug the phone into a hardware device. The software will run, copy everything off the phone, and then we have that extraction, the files that come from that, we run it through a second program that figures out what all that stuff is and puts it in a report.
So it basically organizes the information into a report for you?
Yes.
With respect to the extraction from the phone you were given from Detective Adam Bergeron Rosa, the ABR4 cell phone, how did that proceed?
He put in a request to me. I got the phone from evidence, and I plugged into a device we have called the Gray Key that can perform the extraction.
And so the jury understands, how do you physically hook up the phone to this device?
There's ports on the box on the Gray Key itself, and we plug the phone into it using the data port on the phone.
The software Gray Key, is that the hardware or the software, or is it both?
Gray Key is more considered hardware. It's running software, but it just extracts the data from the phone. It doesn't do the interpretation.
Were you able to extract data from the cell phone that was labeled ABR4?
Yes.
Okay. What was done with that data once you extracted it?
Then I used Cellebrite, which is software that will make a report. It'll determine what all that data is.
And how does it organize the data for you? If we were using a Cellebrite software right now, what would it look like?
It breaks it up into categories. There's a list on the left, like a table of contents, and it'll split it up by the type of data. So there'll be one category for text messages and one for the call log and one for pictures and videos.
Did you save the data in the report that you generated for this phone that was labeled as ABR4?
Yes.
Okay. And how did you save it? What label did you give it?
I believe I gave it LJK5.
What did you do with that information in that report as you've saved it, once you made it? Where did it go?
I put the evidence copy into our evidence division, the LJK5, and then I gave a copy to Detective Bergeron Rosa.
Were photographs of the phone taken as part of the extraction process?
Yes.
States Exhibit 20.
Do you recognize that photo?
Yes.
Okay, what's that a photo of?
That's a photo of the packaging on the phone before I open it.
This is before you open it?
Yes.
Did you take this photo or somebody else?
I took that.
You take this photo. Okay. And separate from that, I'd like to show you what's been marked for identification purposes only at this time. States Exhibit 21. Do you recognize that?
Yes.
Okay. What do you recognize that to be?
That's the backside of the phone, ABR4.
That's the backside of the physical phone itself?
Yes.
Okay. And other than the fact that it's on a larger piece of paper with a small little red sticker at the bottom, is there any differences to that photo from when you remember seeing that phone before doing your analysis versus when you see it today?
No.
Okay. Your Honor, at this time, I would ask for the identification of the certificate for States Exhibit 21.
No objection?
No, Your Honor.
All right, the ID is stricken, centered as a full exhibit.
Let's go ahead and take a look at Exhibit 20 here on the large screen. Do you recognize that to be Exhibit 20 that I just showed you?
Yes.
All right. I'd like to go ahead and draw your attention to the label that's in the middle of the screen. So did the label itself tell you that this was, in fact, the phone that was ABR4, labeled as ABR4?
Yes.
From that, I'd like to also jump now to State's Exhibit 21 and direct your attention to the screen here. Is this the back of that particular phone or that you've recovered from that envelope?
Yes, it is.
And I'll draw your attention to the lower sticker that's provided here. Do you see the red box on the screen?
Yes.
Okay. We'll zoom into that. Could you read out the IMEI number on this phone?
352-082-509-319-804.
So this is that same tone that we're talking about, this consistent number with an IMEI number that goes back to this particular phone, is that right?
Yes.
Did you review any of the data that you extracted from this phone yourself, or did you do some limited review of that?
Yes.
Did the data extraction process off of this phone also provide information as to whether or not it had been logged into any Facebook Messenger accounts at any time?
Yes, it did.
Can cell phones that have information deleted from them still have relevant information for an investigation?
Yes.
And the jurors are probably already likely aware of Facebook and Facebook Messenger, but just for the record, what is Facebook and how does Facebook Messenger work?
Facebook is a terrible social media app where people can post things and share with their friends and family. Messenger started as being in part of the Facebook app where people could send direct messages to each other. Now they also have a separate app, so you can use it within Facebook or in the separate app.
Returning to the data then that was extracted, or actually I should ask this about Facebook Messenger. The accounts on Facebook Messenger, do they have any specific number or an account ID that is associated with each account that they have, that exists?
Yes.
Returning to the data then extracted from the phone, as we the same phone that we're seeing here on State's Exhibit 21 on the screen, that IMEI number, were you able to see whether a Facebook Messenger account with the account number of 10000900788503 was ever logged into that phone or accessed from that phone?
Yes.
And did you look at the user account that was extracted from this phone for that Facebook account number that we just read?
I did.
What was the user account name on the Facebook Messenger account number, the one we just read, that was once logged into this phone?
The account name was Adam Kayla Montgomery.
Adam Kayla Montgomery?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Detective Rosick. I don't have any further questions for you. I believe that this is only have a few.
Thank you.
That's me.
Hi.
I'm Caroline Smith. How are you?
Good.
So you have been a detective, I think you said, for 6 years?
I've been in cyber crimes for about 6 years. I was a detective for a couple of years before that.
Ah, okay. So you have been, you were in cyber crimes in 2019?
Yes.
You were in cyber crimes on October and November of 2019.
Yes.
And you did an extraction of a phone for John Sargent in November of 2019. Does that sound right?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, let me ask you another question or two. And, well, if I showed you a copy of a report, would that help refresh your recollection?
I believe so.
It may take a little bit to make the connections here, but I will start with first a copy of a report prepared. Well, can you tell me what this document is?
That looks like a report for a cell phone extraction.
And what's the date prepared by you?
Yes.
And what is the date of that report?
November 4th, 2019. Yes.
And what is that case number?
19-15480.
19 what?
15480.
Okay. I'm going to show you a series of documents. This is the
I'm going to show you another docket. I've actually got a whole bunch of documents clipped here, but I think need to show you the first page of that. Do you recognize what that first page is?
It's the first page of report.
Okay. What is the date of that report?
1/20/20.
Date and time report. Reported. Okay. So that is a report on an incident that was reported in 10/22/2019.
Yes.
And what is the date? What is the case number of that?
19-15480.
Okay. Is the case number of the report of an incident that happened 10/22/2019, is that the case number as the extraction report that you did in November of 2019?
Yes.
Okay. And do you remember the name John Sargent?
I do not.
Okay. Do you recall being asked to go back to that report to take location data from that report so that it could be tracked on Google Earth? Do you recall that?
Not specifically for this case, but I can look at the next page if you want me to review it.
Sure. And this was a task that you were given with regard in April of 2022, right?
I don't know. Okay. It's not an uncommon thing, so...
All right. I'm going to show you a copy of a police report. By the way, who's Detective
Rahill? He's one of the Manchester detectives.
And was he the lead on the case of State versus Adam Montgomery?
No, I don't believe so. There was multiple officers working on it. I don't know who's considered the lead.
Do you recall that he was one of the officers working on it?
A lot of people working on it, so I don't know the list.
Okay. I'm going to show you a copy of a document, but you did say that Detective Rahill worked on this case, right?
I couldn't say for sure, but I think it's consistent.
Okay. I'm going to show you a copy of this police report and see if that refreshes your recollection if you were asked to pull out prior extraction on a phone of John Sargent in 2022. Does that refresh your recollection?
I don't remember specifically. This isn't my report, but
right.
Like I said, it's not uncommon for me to do that.
Okay. That you might go to another older case and pull out information that you had already extracted to see if you could find something relevant to the new case.
I get asked to look at the extraction and put it in a different form. Mm-hmm. I'm not usually investigating the case. I'm just assisting with the technical aspects of it. So the report, the information is already in the report, and I would move it to a different form.
Okay. And in this case, you don't recall if you were asked to look at Jonathan Sargent's phone and see if there was location data on it?
I do that frequently. I just don't know. This is the first time I'm hearing of this in quite a while, so I just don't remember specifically this case.
So back in April of 22, you may have been asked that, but it's just not registering right now. You're not saying yes or no?
I didn't say it's not registering. It's just saying it didn't.
Sustained.
It's not some, you may or may not have been asked to do it. It's something that you don't recall right now.
Not specifically. I don't usually get much into the names of the cases. I just do what they ask for.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, then.
Just very briefly, President, you just asked a moment ago about location information on a phone. Could you just describe for the jury, what is location on information on a phone? What was that question about?
Phones can store location information in a couple different ways. They keep different databases. Sometimes pictures have the location embedded, or they use it for advertising and tracking your phone, and some of that information can be recovered in the extraction.
Sometimes it's recovered, sometimes is it not?
Correct.
Okay. And the information, is that, I know this is going to sound like a stupid question, I apologize, but that's information I imagine that follows the phone rather than follows the owner, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Anything further? Question. All right, you may step down.
Thank you.
Any objection?
So, excuse for the day for sure.
Okay. You may be excused for the day.
Your Honor, at this time, the state would call Detective Brian Olson to the stand. Detective Olson, if you just please go ahead and take the stand. Watch your step as you go up there. And I'm going to stand you just for a brief moment.
Yeah.
Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you will give this jury will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you, sir. Please feel free to have a seat.
Since we're being recorded here, would you please state your full name, spelling your first and last for the record?
Ryan Olson, R-Y-A-N-O-L-S-E-N.
And Detective Olson, where are you currently employed?
Currently employed by the Manchester, New Hampshire Police Department.
How long have you been working for Manchester?
Since 2015.
2015.
Yep.
Any law enforcement experience before working for the Manchester Police Department?
Yes. Prior, I was employed by the Concord, New Hampshire Police Department since 2014.
In 2014. So 1 year in Concord and then Manchester since 2015. Is that
yes,
right?
Sir.
And I take it, are you a full-time certified officer with the Manchester Police Department?
I am.
Since you've been with the Manchester Police Department, what are some of the different work assignments you've had? I'm going to assume that you started in patrol, but if you could kind of go on and tell us about some of the different units that you've been assigned to.
Yeah, so started in patrol, like you said. From there, I was selected into the Special Enforcement Division, which is broken up at that time into two separate units, so the Street Crime Unit and the Special Investigations Unit. Street Crime, I started in Street Crime in 2019. Main job of street crime is just for interdiction stops to cultivate informants. And then around 2021, I went over to Special Investigations Unit, which is long-term drug investigations.
Okay. And are there any different units besides those that you're, the ones that you get current assignment to, are there any other units that you serve or that you help the Manchester Police Department with?
Yeah, I'm also currently assigned to the entry team and the breaching unit for the SWAT team.
How long have you been with the SWAT team?
Since 2020.
2020. So you were not on the SWAT team in 2019?
I was not.
All right. In 2019, which one of those units were you working with?
The street crime unit.
And were you ever involved in a search of an apartment at 315 East High Street in Manchester on October 22nd, 2019?
I was.
What was your role in executing that search warrant?
Just to hold on to detained parties as the apartment's getting cleared. Once the apartment was deemed safe by SWAT, searching the apartment.
So this is a SWAT search, or sorry, a SWAT operation to be able to get control of the building itself, and then your team goes in?
It
or
was.
Are you part of theirs?
No, we are strictly outside waiting until it's deemed clear by the SWAT team at that time.
Did you have a court-ordered search warrant before conducting the search?
We did.
All right. And with regards to that, if you could explain, or first of all, were you present when the SWAT team first made entry into the home?
I was outside.
Yes. You were outside. Okay. Why weren't you with them?
Just due to the high threat level that was deemed to be inside.
Mm-hmm.
It was strictly for the SWAT team to execute the search warrant based on that they trained for that. That is specifically what the SWAT team trains for.
Okay. And after they made the home secure, people were safe, at that point, what were you assigned to do?
At that point, I was assigned to search the residence. I was tasked with searching a bedroom on the east side, inside of the apartment.
On the east side of the apartment?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So this is October 22nd, 2019. I'd like to go ahead and show you exhibits 28, 29, 30, 31, 32. Just a minute. Your Honor, I understand that there is no objection. The state is no objection from the defendant. We're going to ask that the state's exhibit 28 through, again, 32, have the identification stricken.
No objection?
No objection.
The ID is stricken. They're entered as full exhibits.
Well, so I'm going to go ahead and show you the same series of exhibits, exhibits 28 through 32. I want to show them to you individually, and then we'll put them up on the screen in a few minutes, and I'll ask some additional questions.
Okay.
Do you recognize this one first, starting with State's Exhibit 28?
I do.
Okay. What do you recognize that to be?
315 East High Street.
Okay. And based upon this photo, do you know the approximate time that this photo was taken? Now, I don't mean time of day. I just mean whether it was anywhere near the time of your search warrant.
Yeah, that would be after it was deemed safe, most likely, by the SWAT team prior to the actual search by detectives.
All right. I'd like to show you now State's Exhibit 29. What do you recognize that photo to be?
Room E, the bedroom room E, which is situated on the east side of the apartment.
Is that the bedroom that you searched, bedroom that was labeled E?
It was.
Okay. And if you could explain to the jury, most people don't have letters on the outside of their bedroom doors. How do rooms get certain classifications or numbers, letters, when you're going to do a search like this?
Yeah, so for ease of searching, prior to actually everybody diving in, each detective and searching part of the apartment, each room is given a letter for ease of searching. So I search room E, so-and-so detective search room A. Just ease of use for the report, so you're not constantly saying bedroom, east side, in the center of the apartment, and you say room E in your report. It's a lot easier.
Okay. I'm going to show you State's Exhibit 30 now. Do you recognize that photo?
I do.
Okay. And what do you recognize that photo to be?
Guns that are situated in the northeast corner of the apartment, or the bedroom.
Was that your bedroom, the bedroom E that we were just talking about?
It was.
And State's Exhibit 31?
That is a Stag Arms firearm, rifle, serial number 57760.
And State's Exhibit 32?
And that is a close-up of the serial number along with the make and origin of the firearm.
I'd like to leave these photos with you. If you can't see the resolution on the screen, please feel free to refer back to these, okay?
Okay.
That being said, I'd like to go ahead and show you State's Exhibit 28 on the big screen. Do you recognize that? Or, I'm sorry, what address do you recognize that to be again?
315 East High.
And we're gonna go ahead and zoom in on the front door area. Is that the same door that you entered to be able to do your search?
It was.
And separate from that, going to State's Exhibit 29 now. Tell us what we're looking at here.
So this is room E. This is the bedroom on the east side of the apartment and is centralized in the apartment just off of the kitchen.
Now, with regards to this particular room,
part of, or what were the different things that were listed in the search warrant that you were supposed to be looking for?
Drugs, U.S. currency, ledgers, firearms, anything in that nature.
And approximately how much drugs, how much drugs did you find in this home?
I believe there was about 850 grams of crystal methamphetamine, about 56 grams of fentanyl, and some miscellaneous pills along with marijuana.
Did you say almost 850 grams of methamphetamine?
I did.
During this search, did you find multiple firearms in this bedroom?
Yes, sir, we did.
Moving on now to State's Exhibit 30. What are we looking at here?
That is a photo of a few firearms in the northeast corner of the apartment.
And I would ask you if you could just step down from the witness stand with the court's permission and just show us where the firearms are in the photo. Just go ahead and point it out. Thank you. Only now turning to State's Exhibit 31.
That is the overview of a Stag Arms rifle that was located in that northeast corner of the same bedroom.
And you read the serial number, I believe, for us before. I'm going to go to State's Exhibit 32. Could you go ahead and read that serial number again?
Yes, it's serial number 57760.
How many other guns did you find in the search of this bedroom?
I believe we located approximately 8 guns. Two were ultimately identified as BB guns, if I recall.
So two, so out of the 8 plus this one, so that's what, 6 other?
Yes, sir.
Operable firearms?
Yes, sir.
And told us again about 850 grams of methamphetamine. Working as an officer of the Manchester Police Department since 2015, you said before you've worked on patrol, you've worked street crimes, you've worked with SIU, you've worked with other things with gangs as well. Do you have familiarity with common and generalized drug purchase amounts?
I do. Okay.
The pounds of methamphetamine seized, 850 grams, is that something that you know to be associated with individual use or with dealing?
No, that is definitely dealing.
And the owner of this particular bedroom, the person who was residing in this bedroom, what was that person's name?
Jonathan Sargent.
Okay. Did you have a description of Jonathan Sargent before you went ahead and conducted this search?
Yes, he was a white male with red hair.
Okay. And do you know if he was ever convicted by any agency for the items that were inside of his room?
Yeah, I believe he was ultimately, or he took a plea deal in federal court. And he's currently incarcerated until 2031 in Greenville, Illinois.
And you said in federal court?
Yes, sir.
So was that matter, or do you know if that matter was prosecuted by the United States Department of Justice?
It was.
And do you know, with regards to his conviction, what was his conviction for? Possession or possession? What, if anything, do you know about the charge that he pled guilty to?
I was trafficking with firearms and drugs.
And drugs?
Yes, sir.
Just a moment, please, Your Honor. Detective, thank you very much for your time. I don't have any further questions for you. I believe Attorney Smith will.
Thank you.
I do. My name's Caroline Smith. And I do have some follow-up questions. So John Sargent was arrested the day of the search, right?
Yes, ma'am.
He was arrested on an arrest warrant,
yes,
right? And the search warrant was prepared prior to going there to his residence on October 22nd.
It was.
And you were a participant member of the street crimes unit, right?
I was in the street crime unit, yes, ma'am.
And you were, so this was a process that took a little bit of time to gather all the intel on John Sargent, to prepare the arrest warrant and prepare the search warrant and prepare the plan for arresting Mr. Sargent and entering the home.
Yes.
And it was a fair amount of days between the investigation and all of that, right?
Yes.
Probably a week or two from the determination that you were going to arrest Mr. Sargent to actually executing the warrant?
I don't know the exact time frame. I know when you have an investigation, obviously it goes on for Mr. Sargent. It was controlled buys. And from there, whatever the time was that they said, hey, we have enough, we're going to write the search warrant and the arrest warrant, that's when it was.
Okay. And you said one of his convictions was trafficking in firearms.
Yes.
And one thing that you said on direct was about really six guns because two were BB guns.
Mm-hmm.
And a substantial amount of ammunition was in there as well, right?
Crystal methamphetamine was a substantial amount. There was ammunition. I can't attest to how much was in there. I don't recall.
Okay, you recall that there was a lot.
That there was ammunition? There was ammunition, yes.
And, sorry, I was almost talking over you. There was ammunition for various types of firearms, right?
I believe so.
Okay. And there were other weapons there as well, right?
Yes.
Brass knuckles?
Yes.
A crossbow?
Yes.
And different brands of guns?
Yes.
Okay. So there were several pictures of, and I think you still have them there, taken, those pictures must have been taken on the day of the search, right?
They were.
Okay. And they reveal what the, some of the items that were recovered, and the stag itself was one of the ones recovered by you.
Yes.
And Mr. Sargent's phone was also recovered.
I believe so, yes, ma'am.
And you were the one that recovered the stag. I'm going to ask you to take a look at State's Exhibit 33. Is that the stag firearm that you collected?
It should be. I just need to see the serial number to confirm. I want to take it and flip it.
If you
can, I flip it. Serial numbers.
There. Does it look like?
It looks like it, but I'm not, without saying that this, I can't see the serial number, I'm not going to say that that's it.
Sure. So. Okay. And speaking of serial numbers are the way that, oops, my back's to the dirt. Serial numbers are the way that you track a firearm, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Because one firearm can look exactly like another one, right?
They could.
And as a matter of fact, most brands look pretty much like, well, models within a brand are expected to look alike, right?
Within the same brand? Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Now, there's a, it, the gun looked kind of shiny in the picture, and it doesn't look so shiny now. Do you know why?
I believe it was fingerprinted. I'm not sure.
Okay. And so what you're seeing, you believe to be the residue from the fingerprinting process?
I believe so.
Okay. And actually, there's some red tape here that has been cut to allow me to open, or anyone to open this box, right?
The evidence tape?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And I'd like you to look at this piece of evidence tape, and can you read what the evidence tape says right along there? Right there.
State Police Forensic Lab.
Okay, so it's the Forensic Lab. And can you read a date? Is this another piece of that tape?
Oh, this one, Forensic Lab.
And then the date that's there.
Well, this one looks to be on regular evidence. This one is the Forensic Lab going this way.
Okay, so the date is not associated with their lab?
Well, it's touching it. It says 4/12/22.
Okay. All right.
And do you know if it was fingerprinted as a result of your investigation into assuming that it was fingerprinted?
I'm assuming it's fingerprinted, yes, ma'am.
Assuming that it is, do you know if that was in relationship to your investigation into John Sargent?
Yes, but it was not my investigation to John Sargent.
Okay. So that's something that would be done to try and track evidence from the gun itself.
Yes, ma'am.
And another thing that you might want to do is, if you had a suspect, you might want to try getting DNA from the gun to track it, its movements, in a sense.
You could.
Do you know if it was done in reference to the John Sargent case?
I do not know.
When you collected that gun, did you make any connection in October 22nd, 2019 to a missing Stag AR-15 firearm report from October 3rd regarding the Fran firearms?
I did not.
Okay. And when you collect a firearm like this, that's a pretty dangerous weapon, and is in the hands of somebody who it shouldn't be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that you might do is put it into NCIC to check the ownership of the firearm, right?
Yes, dispatch would run the serial number to see if it came back as stolen.
Okay. And one of the reasons to do this is maybe if there's an open case about a firearm, you can close the case. But another reason is, was this firearm stolen or did somebody give it away? Because that might be a crime as well, right?
Correct.
And did you participate in any of that sort of activity after you collected the Stag firearm?
Yeah, I don't know if I ran it. There's multiple people in the house. It always gets run at some point in time, the serial number, to see if it's through NCIC by dispatch.
Okay. And if you ran the serial number and it came up as a stolen firearm for someone else, that person should get alerted to the location of that police department should be alerted to the fact that this stolen firearm has been found.
I'm sorry, can you?
Sure.
Thank you.
I have to think of how to do that. Hold on. When you put the serial number of a gun through NCIC,
mm-hmm.
and you run that, if it comes up as a stolen weapon, then the department involved in the report on the stolen weapon can get advised.
Yes.
And Russell, there's a Russell Street in Manchester, right?
There is.
And Hill Street was where you found this gun.
East High Street.
High Street. Thank you. Is in Manchester, right?
It is.
And you work for the Manchester Police Department, right?
I do.
Okay. Oh. I'm going to show you a copy. Can you, off the top of your head, identify the case name that you went and executed that search warrant on?
The case name?
The case number for Manchester Police Department.
For the search warrant? No, I don't recall.
If I showed you a copy of the report, do you think that might refresh your recollection about the case number?
Yes, 19-015480.
Thank you. Nothing further. Thank you.
Very briefly, if I may, Your Honor. Detective Olson, you just read the case number called 19-015480. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
You just had read a moment ago?
Yes, sir.
Were you able to review the search warrant, and specifically that Detective Horn had obtained to make that search at 315 East High Street?
I do not.
Are you aware of whether that search warrant was for one count sale of a controlled drug versus for trafficking in guns?
I was not aware.
How many different people did you see get escorted outside of that house, or are you aware of that were escorted outside of that house before the search could take place?
There was a good amount of people.
More or less than 10?
Probably right around there.
Right around 10. So thank you very much, Detective Wilson. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. I think, did you say that you found this Stag firearm in Jonathan Sargent's room?
Objection, Your Honor. Beyond the scope.
Sustained.
You were pointed to a search warrant. Your understanding of the ultimate arrest was trafficking in firearms, right?
That was a conviction.
Okay. And a good amount of people were escorted out of the house. So that was consistent with the information that you had and used to make a plan for safe entry into the house, was there the fact that there were a lot of people there, right?
I wasn't part of the SWAT team at that time, so I didn't make the plan or what the plan was for all of these people at that time.
Okay. In any event, there were more than one person in the house, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Well said. Will you ask the witness to be excused, please?
All right. You may step down. Any objection to his being excused?
No.
This witness is excused.
Thank you. If we could approach, please, Your Honor.
Yes. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes, as I've said before, evidence takes longer to come in than we expect, or it comes in a little more quickly. Today it was a little more quickly than was anticipated. So we are done for today. So I'm going to release you a little bit early today. I'm going to remind you, do not discuss this case, not with each other or with anybody else. Don't look up any witnesses, or don't drive by any locations. Don't do any independent research about the law. You will need to decide your verdict based exclusively on the evidence that's presented here at trial and the law as the court will give it to you in its instructions. So, as I had previously told you, we are not going to have trial tomorrow, so you do not need to come tomorrow, but we will start up having come at 8:45 on Wednesday morning. So 8:45 Wednesday morning, and we will resume the evidence. Again, please make sure to avoid any media, newspaper coverage, online coverage, radio coverage of this case. Give your paper to your neighbors and turn off your television, read a good novel. All right, we will see you all at 8:45 on Wednesday morning for a 9 a.m. start. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen, for your time and attention.
All right, so Jerry.
Jerry, do you want to take a break now? You have a little bit.
Thanks.
Very good. All right, so. With regard to Mr. Harju, do you need a transport order first of all?
Yes, Your Honor. I know we had originally requested, I believe, requested him for today. We canceled that once we knew last week's witnesses had changed. So we would ask for one for tomorrow. I'm sorry, Wednesday. I apologize for Wednesday.
First thing.
Yes, please.
And there's no Richards issues or anything we need to be aware of with regard to counsel or anything like that?
I know of none, Your Honor. Attorney Smith and I were just discussing with regards to this. We agree that there is still an issue in terms of whether Mr. Harshen wants to come over and testify, but I do not see that there, short of that refusal, that there is some other sort of Richards issue to what his testimony would be. We've had, he has already provided a report, not a report, excuse me, but he did already sit down and speak with investigators. We know the substance of what his statement would be. It would be very brief. It again does not need to involve where he is currently residing. That does not need to be brought out in front of the jury in order to ask them what the appropriate questions. I don't know that you would have some other sort of Richards issue that's there.
I mean, I...
He has one previous Class A felony that would be appropriate for counsel to be able to ask him about, but that's a prior conviction for a felony within the last 10 years.
I guess what I'm trying to avoid is what happened with Mr. Bernatchez. And so, you know, at the time we brought him in, it was essentially represented that we didn't think, that counsel didn't think he had could invoke the privilege, but then it turned out, either by agreement or otherwise, that he was not going to testify. So, does anybody know who his lawyer was for whatever his underlying case is?
I do not, Your Honor.
Okay. I don't know if it was from South or from North. But either way, I think we can figure that out.
Attorney Knowles is just telling me he believes that Mr. Harsher's current charges are out of Nashville.
Okay. So let me just ask, Attorney Smith, do you want to say something? Do you have something to add on this?
Just on the issue that he has pending charges, and that is water for cross-examination.
His pending charges and the relevance...
motive to say something to get a good plea
order or something. But you're not planning to ask about the underlying facts of those cases, just that he has them.
I have not fully determined that because we're still sort of trying to get documentation, but
what would be the relevance of that? I mean, other than trying to get him to invoke the privilege.
No, but if he is saying that he is guilty of the charges and wants to curry favor in order to get a better deal, if he's not guilty of the charges, he doesn't have to curry favor to get a better deal. If he's concerned that he'll get convicted, all of that is fodder.
We have a basis to make any of those assumptions, Your Honor. An individual who's already saying he's refusing to come over and be transported. Being able to ask an individual whether or not they have charges pending is certainly one thing, whether or not they thought they were going to get some sort of a resolution out of this. But with the facts that we have been presented with Mr. Harshen, we refuse to transport over here. The nature of whatever he is accused to do is irrelevant to the question of his credibility on the stand.
And you're... Well, I'm not sure I agree with that, but I don't want to wait till he gets on the stand. So we need to, I think we need to figure out who his lawyer is, see if we can get the lawyer here on Wednesday morning.
Or would you like to try to do it sooner, Your Honor? Would you like us to try to find out who that attorney is? I know we have a very short time left today. But then be able to try to make contact with them today and provide the court with a further update tomorrow, so then potentially they could go and speak with Mr. Harshen.
Yes. So what's his first name?
Michael.
And?
Date of birth is 9/5/84. Last name is spelled Harjun.
Let me see. I may be able to determine who his counsel is in his current case.
It was going to be something that was brought up before, then we could have had it addressed in a 404B motion. I understand we're going to be dealing with it now, which is fine, but just pointing out it's another matter of something else that could have been taken care of before.
Your Honor, was a relatively late witness. After that, another witness came along, and we did as fast as we could, and then we had to deal with another witness, and then we're pretty much in trial, and then it was my mistaken belief that they wouldn't be trying because he was refusing transport. So that was my mistaken belief, and so that's why nothing got filed even next. But I still think his testimony is not admissible.
How is this testimony any different than the court's rulings about, for example, when Josh Zimmerman's testimony was not connected to Guilford? When we originally thought his testimony wasn't connected to the Guilford Street address, or had a temporal relationship to the charges in this case, the court had said that was then propensity evidence. And then the state got additional information from Mr. Zimmerman to connect connect it to the address and really the time frame. And so then I said it is admissible. Here with Mr. Harju, it seems that there's no connection that the state asserts regarding whether or not the guns that we're talking about are the guns that are the subject of this case. And that's my concern. And I would say the same thing as I said with regard to the testimony of Mr. Zimmerman, which is if there's some connection to the theft, receiving stolen property of the guns that are the subject matter of this case, then in all likelihood, I think that it would be admissible. But absent any connection, just some general statements about having guns or using guns, I guess I'm a little bit challenged to see why that's not propensity evidence.
I think there's two different parts to that. First part, I certainly see what you're saying with regards to that, and obviously you know that the state felt that with regards to Mr. Zimmerman there was a connection that was there, especially with regards to the temporal proximity of the statement of having the previous AR. And then you asked us for clarification for him on the address. Was it Union Street or Prospect? Or what street, essentially, to Guilford Street? And he clarified and said, offered on his own, to say that it was Guilford Street. So there is that difference that is there between that and Mr. Harju. Mr. Harju does not specifically go back to a particular location or to a particular date or month with regards to the defendant's statements about owning guns, possessing them, or having never been caught with them in his hands. However, the state still feels that with regards to those statements, they are admissible and sufficiently connected to his ownership of these guns here. Part of the conversation here, when we talk about that temporal relationship, is that with regards to the conversation with Mr. Harju, it's the state's understanding that, and what our belief is that the conversation is about the current charges that the defendant is pending. Now, I understand, Your Honor, if you're indicating that there needs to be a supplemental or an additional, I should say, fact that conversation inside the jail about current charges was currently this charge, then I do not see that in the interview. So I understand that if you're saying that there's an additional something else that you're looking for that Mr. Harju was able to state, that these comments are about this particular current charge that's being tried right now, that is not in his statement. But we feel that it's because it is about his current, that he has talking about the pending charges, it's a fair and reasonable inference to say that conversation goes back to the charges that he is immediately facing trial for, which being these charges.
And does Mr. Harju say that when I was talking to Mr. Montgomery, we were talking about the firearms that he's charged with here, and Mr. Montgomery was saying to me, yes, I had those guns, I was selling those guns. Would he say that?
And that's exactly what I was saying, what I meant right there, Your Honor. I apologize for not communicating clearly. He does not. He does not tie that comment to specifically this charge. What he is talking about is pending charges. And I understand that there's a difference in sight of that, whether in the collective this is something you can be referred to as opposed to in the individual charges. He does not say, and I don't, that's why I just don't want to misrepresent to the court.
Okay,
he
I see.
So he does not say that it is about these two particular guns that are being tried right now. He's saying that it is about the pending charges, and I have to assume that that is within the global sense of the things that the defendant is pending, not for this specific case.
And meaning he has two other cases that involve guns, right? And so what you're saying is it, he has those cases and that his other case, the Harmony Montgomery related case.
Correct.
So all Mr. Harju would say is it's, we weren't talking about anything specific, just.
His pending charges, and pending being all of the charges that you motioned. So as you said before, with regards to your previous ruling on Joshua Zimmerman, you were looking for a specific fact, a nexus that ties into these two particular cases. I do not see that Mr. Harju has said a specific nexus of the defendant's statements to him about owning guns, robbing other people, having guns but never being caught, that ties to the specific case. But the state's standpoint is still that we feel that that conversation has a sufficient reasonable inference that the jury could make that it is referring to this particular case and that it should be admissible. But we understand what your court's ruling was with Mr. Zimmerman, and I can represent to you that that connection that you were looking for there is not present in his statement, but we feel it's still a reasonable inference. The alternative would be that this statement would be made and it would never be admissible for any of his particular cases because we couldn't narrow it down to one specific firearm or another. And so that's why we feel it's a reasonable inference to make here.
Say that last part again.
The inverse of the argument, Your Honor, would be that if somebody says this particular statement, but if it can never be tied to any one particular firearm, that would generally be used to keep what we feel would be a reasonable inference that he's talking about the guns at issue, and that statement would never be allowed to be used against Mr. Montgomery in any of his firearm cases.
But by the same measure, then it would be your view that that statement could be used in every trial against Mr. Montgomery.
As long as there wasn't some indicia that said that it went to a specific weapon, then yes, I agree. But generally, we would take that standpoint. You are correct.
Okay. But isn't that what 404B is designed to prevent? The idea that just because he may have indicated that he did do that at some point in time, that should be used against him at all points in time?
And I think, Your Honor, if it was some point in time, as in some point in time in the defendant's past history, I might agree with you, especially if the defendant was saying, I've never possessed firearms, I've never owned firearms, I've never touched firearms. But we're not talking about some point in time, we're talking about a specific set of time of the pending charges that are here. So we would just see things differently.
Right. Although we're talking about not a narrow point in time, right? The dockets 507 and 509 span a broader point in time, right?
Correct.
Like years?
I think with regards to, I think, Your Honor, between the nature of these offenses that are charged, it's a tight time window of 6 months.
Okay. Attorney Smith, do you want to add anything?
Yes, Your Honor. The inference that Mr. Harju was referring to pending charges is rebutted by Mr. Harju's own statement that Adam talked about, I keep getting charged with armed career criminal. He's not talking about pending cases, he's talking about cases keep coming at him. So I do not think that that's a reasonable inference, that this is 404B, it is not connected to these specific charges, and should be inadmissible.
Can I see the statement?
Yes, sir. Specifically referring to pages 1584 and 1585. This is what the state has.
1584 and 1585, okay. I also have made a noted transcript that's not too much different.
stipulations would be?
The state anticipated asking for the stipulation before the end of the state's case in chief.
Okay. And then in terms of looking quizzically.
Which are you talking about? Because we already had one read into the record with regard to
the Facebook.
The account.
The Facebook
account. The Facebook. That was one that was read.
Yeah.
We still have the stipulation with regards to them qualifying.
Right.
Which so, I thought would be part of the instruction that when you get to that other element, the parties use it as part of the instruction because it's a stipulation with regard to that element.
Right. So, but they want it before the close of the state's case.
Okay.
Which
okay.
I would I expect. See. And then that is my next question, which is I can put it into the instructions. I don't think we should give them what we have. It has to be altered in any event. So there's a couple ways that we can do this. Obviously, you know, I agree with the state's request that they would like it read into evidence prior to the close of the state's case. I will do that, Attorney Knowles or Attorney Agata. You need to ask me when you're ready to have that done. And then the question is, do you also want these stipulations either marked and to go in with them or put into the instructions or any or just read it in and that's the end of that?
With regard to the stipulation that the email address is to Adam Montgomery, I think that's been read into the record as evidence, so I think it's there and need not be exactly repeated for the instructions.
Okay.
I would just say, though, if you're thinking about putting a stipulation in the instructions, we might as well put them both in together. Otherwise, it starts to make it look like one stipulation is different than the other stipulation.
No, I think as far as the instruction, therefore, the state has to prove defendant knowingly. And then as far as the third element, the parties have stipulated that he qualifies. He has the qualifying things, and you do not. You can take that as true.
If that's consistent with your practice, Your Honor, that's fine with the state.
Okay. Yeah, I've done it in, you know, any number of ways. So I think we can include that. The Facebook issue is a piece of evidence. Doesn't directly satisfy an element of the offense, but so I can. I think we should read it before the close of the state's case, and then if you want me to add it to the instruction under the elements of armed career criminal, I can do that as well.
That makes sense.
Okay.
I kind of think you have to, that you can't really do right. that particular instruction without it.
Okay, so I will do that. It's not in here now, but let me go give you what I have for the instructions. I've got to print them out. So is there anything else before I step off the bench for us to do that?
Just one moment.
Okay, so I'll be back out in just a few minutes to give you these instructions. And as I say, they are drafts. And when we come in, maybe I'll have come in a little early Wednesday morning in case there's something that you want to give to me. What I would say about them is if there's any edits or adjustments to them or additional instructions that you want, share with each other, see if there's an agreement on a change or an instruction so that when we do get down to talking about it, you either say, oh, here, we all agree that this is the way it should read, or we don't agree and here are the areas of disagreement.
Do you want to hear an issue that I had thought of and
sure.
be proposing something different than the norm is? You normally say punishment is not for you, it's all for me. Since there is mandatory minimums involved, I was going to suggest that you put punishment is for me to determine within the guideline limits set by the legislature or something like that, because this is a mandatory minimum to who the charges are.
But what we tell them, and I've addressed this before on an armed career criminal case, is that they are not to consider the punishment, and I think they're not to consider the punishment. And I'm going to stick with the standard model instruction on that.
Will you be saying that the punishment is for you to decide?
I already say that in my bifurcated instruction, so I have said that to them already. I don't usually say it again. If you tell me you want me to say it again, I can. But you know, and that goes for the both of you as well, that the punishment in this case is not for the jury to be contemplating either. Okay? So I will leave it where it is, as it is. If you're asking me to say it again, I could give them that model instruction again at the end. I don't have any strong objection or feelings about it one way or the other, but we're not going to be telling them about the minimum mandatory sentences.
No, my request is not to either say minimum mandatory or to give it again the way that you have it structured on the model. It was simply to, if you were to do it again, to do it with judgment is for me to decide based on certain criteria set by the legislature, not anything beyond that, not talking about minimum mandatory, but there is a limitation on your, it's not completely for you to decide. You have certain criteria that on two of the charges you have to make.
That's true. That's true with respect to every charge, right? I mean, in every charge, the court has to consider what the permissible sentencing either obligations or requirements or maximum penalties are. I understand it's different, but the point is for the jury, that's not for them to consider. So absent, you know, if you have some legal basis that you think I should consider, obviously I'll let you bring that to me, but I can tell you that I have considered that in the past, and I'm not inclined to say anything to them different than what the model instruction says. But as I say, if you have something specific you want me to, some legal basis you want me to consider, I'll of course consider that.
And so both sets, by the way, go back to the jury? Preliminary and final?
It'll go back, it goes back as one, you know, 15-page document. And as I said to them at the beginning, I send 6 back, and then if they want 12, I give them 12. If you all just want me to send 12 back, I'm fine to do that. But, either way. But it goes back as one packet.
Okay.
Yes.
Understand that. I was just, if you would not only have one other housekeeping matter,
sure,
you might be able to start addressing some of that while you were in the back of the jury instructions. And then you have drug court tomorrow with regards to, will that be conducted in this particular courtroom? Or will you be in a different courtroom?
We are going to do it in this courtroom.
So it states, just so that both counsel take our material, we'll start moving that material out of here now. We would like to obviously leave the screen up with the electronics, if that's okay with you.
That's fine.
And I was wondering, and I'm asking on behalf of both counsel now, would it be possible to have for us to retain our conference rooms and have them locked tomorrow while we are not in trial, so that otherwise we have to empty out everything that's been left in there? Is that possible?
I don't know. Staff? We can either do that, or I can hold drug court staffing in the grand jury room that I normally do. I was going to do it in here, but I don't need to, and there was a request to possibly do it in the grand jury room anyway, so then they could use this room. I don't know.
I think about public access to our rooms while either set of counsel are here.
Right. Can you lock those?
Yeah.
Oh. I don't have it. I certainly don't have any objection to it. We won't.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So for drug court, we just won't use them tomorrow. Unless there's something.
That wraps up segment number 5 in the firearms trial of Adam Montgomery, the man accused of murdering his 5-year-old daughter. We'll be covering that trial when it occurs later in the year. More to come here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playmcd.com for full details and amoe.playmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.